This is the Popmatic Podcast for February 17th, 2016. It is now the year of the monkey. This is the Pop Medic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Jeremy.
Bill, coming to you like a spider monkey.
Like a spider monkey.
Things get crazy this time of year, because we are right in the middle of Chinese New Year celebrations. So on this episode, things relating to China.
And I wore my red sweater. Thank you.
Awesome. I wore kind of like a burgundy sweater.
That's a cousin.
I ate an egg roll for breakfast.
That's the good. Red
I
is.
An egg roll. I like egg rolls.
Was it leftover? Leftover egg roll?
That's yeah. Okay. That's pretty fresh.
I've done that before. Red is a good luck color for the Chinese New Year. Now, if you don't know, the Chinese zodiac goes through a cycle of 12 years. And this year is the year of the monkey. People born in the year of the monkey are said to be intelligent, clever, and gregarious, but also mischievous trickster types. They're skilled and smart, but they have a quick temper and are arrogant. I was born in the year of the monkey, as was Miley Cyrus.
Maybe so this is your home birth year. Like, you come around the cycle.
Yeah. China is a huge country with many, many people and has the longest recorded human history of any nation on Earth. There's so many things that we could talk about in regards to China, but the first thing that came to mind was Last Train Home, the documentary about Chinese New Year, which when many people travel home to visit their families, it is the largest human migration on the planet, Chinese New Year. I also could talk about some things that I've talked about before, some Cory Doctorow books that take place in China or relate to Chinese culture and life, For the Win, or graphic novel variation on the same theme about Chinese gamers unionizing or attempting to. That would be the graphic novel In Real Life by Jen Wong and Cory Doctorow, one of my favorite books that came out in the last 2 years. I could also talk about one of my favorite operas, as you guys know, is...
Nixon in China.
Yes, by John Adams. Excellent. I could also talk about the early 70s sort of agitated political novels of Frank Chin. I could talk about the hipster literature of Dao Lin. I could talk about the crime novels of Ed Lin. I could talk about Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Inge, which my book club read, which is all about sort of the erasure of Chinese identity and the chaos and pain it causes in one American family. Of course, I could actually get into literature written in Chinese. Now, I'm a stupid American, so I have to read it in translation. But, for instance, The Man with Compound Eyes by Wu Mingyi, or The Three-Body Problem by Sichin Liu. Of course, there's also many Nobel Prize winners for literature over the years are from China, like Mo Yan or Gao Xingjian. Did I mess that name up? Please leave me in the comments. Please let me know in the comments. But what I decided to talk about today was actually one of the most famous filmmakers in the world, Ang Lee, and in particular his film Brokeback Mountain. I think this is... wasn't the first movie I saw of his that I noticed that I really loved, but it's probably his most well-known movie, and it's based on a short story, so it kind of has this literary connection, this book connection, you know, I like to go there.
If you're looking for work, I suggest you get in here pronto.
Well, since we're going to be working together, I reckon it's time we start drinking together.
Make kiss the bride.
We was fishing buddies.
You know, it could be like this, just like this always.
This thing grabs hold of us in the wrong place, and we're dead.
You boys sure found a way to make the time pass up there.
You don't go up there to fish.
You don't know nothing about her.
You have no idea how bad it gets.
If you can't fix it, you got a standard.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Before this movie was made, it had a reputation for being the best unmade script in Hollywood, but at the time, no one would touch it because it was about, as you probably know, unless you were herding sheep in the rural Wyoming, it is about two cowboys that find forbidden love in the rugged Wyoming countryside. But Ang Lee was brave enough to bring it to the big screen. It is a tragic love story, to be sure. One of the things that I love about Brokeback Mountain is the ambiguity around what happens to the character of Jack Twist, played by Jake Gyllenhaal. Most Hollywood movies don't leave unanswered questions. They usually tie things up real nice. And what I really liked about Brokeback Mountain was that it really left the viewer in the same place as a lot of the characters, worrying or wondering what actually happened to the character of Jack. This film featured early starring roles for Jake Gyllenhaal, Heath Ledger, Michelle Williams, and Anne Hathaway. And I know for me, definitely, especially with Gyllenhaal and Ledger, those two actors were definitely sort of in teen heartthrob status, not like serious adult actor status. But this movie, Brokeback Mountain, kind of represented that shift. So one librarian nitpick, the movie is based on a short story by Annie Proulx, who writes a lot about Wyoming, and I enjoy her short stories a lot. But the one thing that I didn't like that Larry McMurtry, who wrote the script, did was he kind of like feminized the Jack Twist character, but I guess, you know, they had to sort of flesh out the story more. But in the short story, both of the men are these like Marlboro Man, cowboy, butch dudes who like don't talk at all. But in the movie, the Heath Ledger character kind of takes that role, and Jake Gyllenhaal's character Jack Twist kind of becomes the more effeminate one. I don't know if that was necessary. But Ang Lee has directed a lot of other great movies. Just to name a couple, The Ice Storm, which is one of the few movies about suburban malaise that I can say I truly enjoy. Though a lot of people in Nashville would probably appreciate that movie after the winters we've had the last few years. And of course, he also directed Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which made more middle-brow snobs appreciate movies that Mike likes more than any other movie in the history. And I thought for sure I would be fighting all the bears in this podcast cave for the right to talk about that movie today. But no one else seemed to think of it except for me. Lee did win Best Director for Brokeback Mountain. Like I said, he's a really famous director today, but he worked really hard for it. He went to art school in Taiwan, and then he came and got a graduate education at the University of Illinois, where he won awards for his student films. And then he went back to Taiwan, made movies in Taiwan, won all the Taiwanese film awards, became famous there, and then it came back to Hollywood and started making movies in Hollywood. And even then, it was off to a rocky start. He made this Civil War movie based on a novella by Daniel Woodrell called Ride with the Devil, which was interfered with by the studio. They changed his cut. It never got a wide release, but eventually Criterion put out the director's cut of Ride with the Devil, which you can get here at the library. Awesome. The films of Ang Lee, I love it. I thought for sure I would just let the comic book boys talk about the whole Hulk issue.
I never saw the Hulk.
You never saw the Hulk?
I never saw
it. It's okay. The CGI is bad.
That's but, what I, yeah. I... It looked bad, but...
Did Lee direct the Hulk? Is that why we're talking about the Hulk?
The one from 2001.
Which is the... Who's the Hulk?
Eric Bana.
Okay, I didn't know
about... Oh, Eric Bana. Yeah.
Eric Bana.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And Ang Lee was the Hulk. I mean, he did all that.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, I've seen behind-the-scenes footage.
I've wanted to see it because it is like the forgotten superhero movie, sort of, because it came out after Spider-Man, I think, like maybe a few months after Spider-Man.
The rise of the superhero dominating the movie world has been slow and rocky.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people think that Ang Lee's Hulk was a misstep. I remember I saw it in theater. It was okay. The CGI was not as good as it would have been now.
Yeah.
But that's me, Amanda.
Okay. So I'm going to get in a time capsule and go back to high school, where my friends and I were on various academic teams. And each year, the ruling body would pick a big, broad, general topic, like, say, space. And then each discipline, which was science, math, English, fine arts, and social studies, would study the different aspects of that particular topic as it related to their field. Now, naturally, I was on the English team. Shock, I know. And so my sophomore year, they picked China as their big topic. And the novel that they selected was The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan. Now, sometimes the books they picked were really stupid and completely unenjoyable. But out of all the books that I read for competitions over my high school tenure, this one was my favorite. I really enjoyed it. So the novel is basically 8 different vignettes, 4 of the mothers and their stories of how they came to live in America from China. Most of these stories are really tragic in nature, and they detail some great trial or sacrifice that the mother had to endure in order to make her way out of China. Then the other 4 stories, kind of interwoven, are about their American-born daughters and how they deal with the embarrassment of their, you know, their mother's lack of English or the discrimination they felt by not looking like everybody else in America. And it's set in San Francisco, so I mean, I'm sure that there was a, it's not quite like they were plopped down in the middle of the Midwest, but that was still a big issue for them. They're all tied together by the death of one of the mothers, and then the book is placed basically at her funeral, and everybody kind of comes together and remembers and, you know, talks and tries to move forward. I liked all of the different stories, even though some of them were pretty sad. I found the characters to be relatable. Even when I disagreed with their actions, they didn't always make the super best choices. Now, the library has both the book for the Joy Luck Club and the 1993 movie version, which I liked. I enjoyed. It's not quite exactly like the book, but it's still good. It's been 20 years since I read this, and I still remember a lot of what happened. Now, granted, we did spend a decent amount of time studying it for the contest, but it still stayed with me. And when Mike wanted to talk about The Year of the Monkey and the Chinese New Year, this is the first book that popped into my head because I think this was the first time I really learned a lot about the Chinese New Year. I really wasn't familiar with that. And for me, one of the stories features a character who was born in the year of the tiger. So she spent most of her story like trying to strive to be very much like a tiger to be able to succeed. Brian had talked about kind of the basis of the Chinese zodiac calendar. The Western zodiac rotates each month, but the Chinese calendar rotates every year. Each animal gets its own year. Like we mentioned, 2016 is the year of the monkey. I did a little research. I wanted to see when I was born. I wanted something cool, like the tiger or the dragon. And I was born in the year of the sheep. And so those born under the sign of the sheep are generally thought to be artistic, kind, caring, tender, and polite. They can also be shy and sensitive. So, you know, 2 out of 7 in that list isn't too bad.
I'm a monkey. I don't know.
So is Brian.
Yeah.
Brian's a monkey too.
He told me yesterday. I thought he was older than me.
Okay, back to you, Bill.
Okay. I'm getting in that time machine too, and I'm going further back to second grade.
You better fuel up before you go.
I want to discuss a work of children's literature that I loved and still remember from my youth called The 5 Chinese Brothers by Claire Huchet Bishop and illustrated by Kurt Weiss. The author, Claire Huchet Bishop, was a Swiss-born children's librarian, and she came to America and worked in the New York City Public Library. Kurt Weiss is a German-born book illustrator who is probably best known for his illustrations he did for Bambi, the children's book, not the movie. The 5 Chinese Brothers starts out with, once upon a time, there were 5 Chinese brothers, and they looked exactly alike. In brief, each brother has a gift or a talent which comes in handy as the story proceeds. It's a very short book, so I'm not going to give too much away. The book is based on a Chinese fable. Miss Bishop dedicated the book to her father, who made me love China, and to her mother, who was a born storyteller. The children's book has come under fire for promoting ethnic stereotypes. However, if you give this wonderful fantasy a chance, it's a great read for young and old alike.
I read that when I was a kid, too.
Great stuff.
Loved it.
Jeremy?
Do you guys remember when I went on vacation and I came back and I learned that this episode was about the Year of the Monkey, but then it got changed to the broader topic of China?
I would like to speak to that issue.
Well, okay. Even though I had already really dug in on my subject, I just want to say,
editor's note, I just want to say that on-air production meetings are my favorite kind of production meetings.
Michael, who's not here for some reason.
Thanks, Michael.
Conveniently.
So he wanted to do Chinese New Year, and it was the Year of the Monkey, so why not have like a monkey-themed episode?
Yeah.
That was what we were going to do. That's what we all talked about.
Yeah.
But then I went back to our content calendar, what we planned, and people had chosen things about China, but not things about monkeys, including Michael.
I need to speak to that as well. We had a side conversation. Mike and I did. I can't find stuff to talk about the monkey. And I'm like, well, I'm working on it, but I might do just Chinese New Year. And he's like, oh, I can do that too. So that was how that evolved.
Well guys.
So go on.
So welcome, Jeremy. Well, we changed the topic.
It's the Year of the Monkey.
Woohoo!
Those are adorable. Though you know them, monkeys. Those adorable creatures with whom we share a common ancestor. But what if we didn't? You know, maybe the most famous alternate evolution story is Planet of the Apes, where humans and damn dirty apes essentially switch places after a nuclear holocaust, leaving humans savage and unthinking and apes in total control. And we also know about the secret cabal of ancient Babylonian lizard people who are positioned at the highest levels of governments of both the United States and the UK. But what if we didn't evolve from anything like monkeys? Because it's the Year of the Monkey, what if we evolved from ducks? So that is the profound question asked by Marvel Comics' Howard the Duck. Created by Steve Gerber and Val Myrick, Howard first appeared in Adventure into Fear number 19 in 1973, then graduated to his own series in 1976. Howard came to Earth courtesy of Thog the Overmaster, a demon from the world Somnus. After a quick stop in the Florida Everglades, where he faced off against Man-Thing, he ended up in Cleveland, Ohio, where he would fight villains like the Turnip Man, Kidney Lady, and Garko the Man-Frog. This all sounds like pretty marginal entertainment, but Howard the Duck, as a candidate at the fictional All-Night Party, received thousands of write-in votes in the 1976 presidential election. Yeah! So this series lasted until 1979 after Steve Gerber clashed with Marvel over ownership of the character.
Excelsior!
And Marvel's future owner, the Walt Disney Company, threatened the comics publisher with a copyright infringement lawsuit because they had already cornered the market on talking ducks. Now that peace has been brokered between Disney and Marvel, you can enjoy Howard the Duck, What the Duck, by Chip Zdarsky and Joe Quinones. Zdarsky is best known for his artwork and dirty, dirty puns on the time travel sex romp comic Sex Criminals. And Quinones is a young artist with a classic style who has worked on big name comics like Spider-Man, Batman, and Fantastic Four. In this book, Howard is a private investigator who finds himself butting heads with She-Hulk, solving the mystery of a senior citizen crime spree, and he gets cosmic with Rocket Raccoon. It's pretty funny stuff, believe it or not, with plenty of dumb jokes that make Put It On My Bill sound like a treatise on thermodynamics. So check out What the Duck to see what would happen if ducks evolved into humans, then one of them was transported to a dimension where humans evolved from apes. Now, I would be remiss not to mention the 1986 big screen Howard the Duck. It stars Leah Thompson and Tim Robbins and features the keen producing instincts of George Lucas. It's a funny movie if you're a child or something. There's also a scene which pushes uncomfortably up against the taboo of interspecies romance. So it's kind of a wonderful, horrible mid-1980s sci-fi anomaly if you're a pervert or a masochist, which I guess are not mutually
Exclusive. Besides this latest comic series, too, Howard has also appeared in some other comics throughout time since his failed bid at big screen stardom, though that was probably only to keep the copyright and not because of any actual support for the character. And he also appeared very briefly in the 2014 film Guardians of the Galaxy, which gave hopes to perverts and masochists like me that maybe he'll show up on the big screen again. But in the meantime, enjoy this Peking treat from Zdarsky and Quiñones.
I agree. I mean, I like that you brought that back. That was a good pun. I brought it back.
What's really funny is I really wrote, I initially wrote like something like Duck L'Orange or whatever. I was like, wait, Peking. Yeah, anyway. Stupid.
I think we've talked about this before. Howard the Duck, the first Marvel superhero movie.
Yeah, totally. So.
Has that distinction.
Great theme song, as I recall.
Yeah.
Howard the Duck.
If it ain't funk, you don't feel it. Music by Thomas Dolby.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library does it. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Jeremy.
Me. I like Mike's say. Tickling My Fancy this week is Puke Force by Brian Chippendale. Chippendale is the drummer and vocalist for the band Lightning Bolt and was a major figure in the Fort Thunder indie comics art scene based in the amazing town of Providence, Rhode Island. Puke Force was published by Drawn and Quarterly this year, I guess. It's a collection of comic strips that are sometimes loosely connected. The sort of tells a whole story, but at the same time, that's not all that important. And most of the time, it's just really hilarious. Chippendale has the strips sort of, normally you read comic strips in like tier one, left to right, tier two, left to right. Instead, he's got like four tiers and you read it, in his words, like a snake or like a rat in a maze or like an intestine. So you go left to right and then down and then right to left and then down and then back left to right. And it is confusing sometimes. And even, I don't know, I even though it said it on every single one, I couldn't remember and it screwed up my head, which was really fun and part of the joy of reading it. The pages are filled with visual noise, like lots of ink, just sort of blots and hash marks and scribbles and swirls and all kinds of textures. And there's sometimes the characters and action sort of disappear amidst all of this. And so you really kind of have to work to look for stuff, and which makes some of the jokes that are buried in there even more funnier.
That's something I would say.
Yeah. The most funniest?
Yes. There's a character that's a giant M&M. There's a video system named Gragas, whose dad was an N64 and whose grandma was an Atari, and it's fantastic. The library does not own this book, but I dare you to ask them to order it and to see what the people in collection development say.
Ouch.
Well,
passive aggressive.
No, it says puke in the title. They'd be like, what?
Or you could interlibrary loan the book.
Well, it's brand new, so it's too new.
Oh, yeah. Too new.
Yeah. But I have interlibrary loaned one of his other books before, and it was a giant book. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bill?
Some delivery required.
Okay. Tickling My Fancy is comedian Bob Elliott. Today, Bob Elliott is best known for being Chris Elliott's father and grandfather to Abby Elliott. Mr. Elliott at one time teamed with Ray Goulding to make a great American comedy duo, Bob and Ray. Ray Goulding passed away in 1990, and Bob Elliott just recently passed away February 2nd, 2016.
Oh, he did?
At the age of 92. This is why I'm doing this, because people need to know this.
Yeah, I didn't know he died.
Bob and Ray were unique. They did off-the-wall dialogue with this wonderful deadpan style. Lucky for you, the library has the very best of Bob and Ray, Legends of Comedy. This four CDs, have some of their most famous bits, Slow Talkers of America, Wally Ballou in Times Square, and the Komodo Dragon Expert.
Well, we've had from time to time with us experts. We always love to bring them on our programs and shows. Tonight is Dr. Daryl Dexter, the Komodo Dragon Expert from Upper Montclair, New Jersey. Say, would you tell us a little bit about the Komodo dragon, Doctor?
Happy to. The Komodo dragon is the world's largest living lizard. It's a ferocious carnivora found on the steep-sloped island of Komodo in the Lesser Sunda chain of the Indonesian archipelago and the nearby islands of Rinja, Padara, and Flores.
Where do they come from?
The Komodo dragon, world's largest living lizard, is found on the island of Komodo in the Lesser Sunda chain of the Indonesian archipelago and the nearby islands of Rinja, Padara, and Flores. Now, we have two in this country that were given to us some years ago by the late former premier of Indonesia, Sukarno, and they reside in the National Zoo in Washington.
I believe I read somewhere where a foreign potentate gave America some Komodo dragons. Is that true?
Yes.
And I have to say this. If you don't laugh at the Komodo dragon, I have no respect for you as a human. So do yourself a favor, check out the very best of Bob and Ray, or I should say, put it on hold, because I've got it, and I'm still enjoying it, and that's one of the perks of working here, so there.
We also have the best of Bob and Ray on Overdrive and Hoopla, so you do not have to wait for Bill to be done listening.
Okay, so when my husband and I were dating, one of the movies that we went to see was Hotel Transylvania. So the basic premise is that Adam Sandler is an animated vampire who owns a hotel, in Transylvania, that only caters to monsters. And so when a human wanders in and falls in love with his daughter, feathers get ruffled. We liked it. It was scary, in a Dracula Den loving it kind of way, which is to say, not at all.
So, I was going to say, man.
That's my kind of horror movie, the ones that are not scary.
Just to say, not at all.
Yes. So recently the library got Hotel Transylvania 2. Now Adam Drac is a grandpa to a cute redheaded little kid that shows no sign of being a monster at all. So when Drac's daughter and her normal husband go visit his parents in sunny California, Drac takes it upon himself to educate his grandson in the ways of the monster, besides just saying blah, 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 which is what the kid does the whole way through, and it's really funny.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I...
What? That's not how that one goes.
What's wrong with... Suffer, suffer, scream in pain... Blood is spilling from your brain.
Daddy.
Come on, you know how I sang it to you.
Zombies gnaw you like a plum. Piercing cries and you succumb.
Still works.
Ever since Johnny and Mavis had their little monster, I've been the happiest vampire in the world!
Are we sure he's a vampire?
Technically, you have until you're 5 to get your vampire fangs.
Oh, he'll get his fangs. He's just like me. Look at him!
Blah, blah, blah.
I don't say blah, blah, blah. Oh!
We've been talking about moving somewhere safer for Dennis.
But then I'll be all alone.
Dad, don't give me the pouty bat face.
We gotta teach this kid how to be a monster.
Wow.
If we get his fangs to come out, Mavis can't leave. Robbie, you okay out there? He's fine. He's blobby.
Okay, Murray, show them how to be scary.
Oh, mean ho crutun tap. We come on.
Ow, my back.
For real.
We're so happy you came to visit.
I love California. 48 flavors. This place is open all night. Right, sir?
Yes.
She's gonna wanna move. I gotta fix this kid now.
How are we doing?
Move. He's adorable.
How cute.
You know who could fix the kid in a snap? Vlad.
Hi, Dad.
Are we ready to do this?
Guys, we're running out of time.
I'm sorry, Blobby. We really meant to call you sooner. Okay, fellas, plan B.
Coming through.
Hopping on. Hit it. Are you kidding me?
The best part of it, I thought, was the casting of all the monsters. So, especially making Mel Brooks the role of Vlad, Drax, uber-human hating father. That's hard to say, man.
Uber-human.
So, sometimes sequels fail to live up to the original, but I thought this one held its own. Plus, like I said, the kid was really cute. So, Hotel Transylvania 2.
I dig it. So, what's tickling my fancy this week is...
My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I earned all this money, but they never take the country out me. I got hot sauce in my bag, swag. I see it, I want it.
That, of course, is the new Beyonce.
I say, is that Queen Bee? My goodness.
I hear she helps Red Lobster make some money.
She did. She did. She did help Red Lobster make some money. Oh, man, it led to some funny conversations, me and my partner, of things that they could have tweeted.
I've not heard the song yet, but I read the lyrics.
So, of course, this actually happened last week now. We record the week before. So Beyonce dropped a video the day before the Super Bowl. She performed the song during the Super Bowl, and everybody knew the words. If there's an art to being a pop star, she's nailing it. You know, and what I love about this song is it's super duper popular. It has a social message, and it's sexy as hell. I mean, like, just, and I think that's just like a weird, really hard thing to do. It's like, yes. Critics like her, but she's also the most popular pop star in the world. She's like entertainment 1%, that's for sure. The video is really cool. It was directed by Melina Matsoukas. She's done another awesome videos over the years, if you want to check it out. Okay, that was just tickling my fancy. Beyonce ruling the universe.
Why did Coldplay play at the Super Bowl halftime show?
I'm still pondering that.
When, like, I know this is sort of maybe after the fact, but, like, I heard Coldplay is playing the Super Bowl halftime show. I thought, wow, nothing captures the savagery,
yes, thank
the passion,
you.
and like sort of like excitement of football
like Coldplay.
Like U2 on cough syrup. My God. And then it's like, oh, well, they're going to have special guests, Beyonce and Bruno Mars. Like, why aren't these exciting people with like visually stunning stage shows the only performers? And then
they've already done it.
But my
comment would have been, because I was watching it, and I was like, if I was live tweeting this right now, my first live tweet would have been, when's Bruno Mars come out?
Yeah.
My second live tweet would have been, Freebird! Yeah. Because that's what I yell when I'm bored at music
videos. Yeah, I would have, give me Freebird.
Well, because like, then Beyonce and Bruno came out and killed it.
Yeah, killed it.
And then like they sent it back to Coldplay to like put us all back to sleep.
Yeah,
I was like, way to wreck the complete vibe.
I was live Facebooking, I said, why waste the world's time with Coldplay when Beyonce exists? And then I mentioned that like Chris Martin is like this like sub Bono monster.
Yes.
I don't care for Bono. I don't like U2. And someone said, you know, he could never be Bono because he's too happy. And
he doesn't wear the shades.
I'm not humble. I think I'm I will sometimes toot my own horn like loudly and proudly. And I said that. Chris Martin is a human Livestrong bracelet, and
that's pretty good.
And someone said, "It's like, wow, that's pretty accurate." So yes, he is a human Livestrong bracelet. Beyonce is like a living goddess, and Coldplay.
Yeah, you know, Beyonce's career, and it, like, just, like, it alters the way you interpret that comic book, The Wicked and the Divine. It's kind of weird. But
I should read that now.
So this is what I think happened with Coldplay. I think there was, like, some executive somewhere was like, Coldplay is the person that was going to be, like, right?
They had a really good agent. Exactly. That was something about somebody somewhere.
Yeah. Exactly, right? You know, somebody, some big up at a label. Right, and some big up at the NFL who are probably out of touch and don't listen to music that has beats in it, right? We're like that they'd be very good for our Super Bowl.
They're a really big name. Yeah, we should use them.
Yes, exactly.
Katy Perry played last year and like that.
And they tried to like put a big show behind it with all the lights and the props.
That big Trojan horse thing and then like
not
the
her,
dancing.
Like the Coldplay. I mean, they tried to do lights and costuming, but it was just like, your songs are still snoozy.
That first song they played was the song that they got sued by my guitar master Joe Satriani for ripping off. It's like the
so they get announced as like as the performer. Everyone said whoa, and then somebody else was like, well, we'll just make it a little bit better.
We'll just stick Bruno Mars in on this.
I don't think it was like a sort of like was there like a bringing together like people from across the musical spectrum.
They were trying to like make it like a memoriam of all these musicians that have come before, and I'm like,
I mean,
this is not the Grammys.
The halftime show, it needs to be
in your face,
bombastic,
party. Yes.
And you know, like Bruce Springsteen sliding his crotch hitting the camera. Like Bruce Springsteen is a perfect. Bruce Springsteen could not come out there and play Nebraska, and you know, like, or play, you know, something like that.
Ghost of Tom Joad.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't come out and say, "Oh, well, I got Mary pregnant." I mean, that's not what he's gonna do. I mean, he knows how
he's gonna sing "Born in the USA."
Exactly.
Like
he knows
he's
how to make
to.
A damn show. But Coldplay.
All right, Coldplay was a terrible Super Bowl performer choice, right? Yes. We can agree on that, right?
Yes. I mean, they did a good job with what they did, but it was just a bad choice.
That didn't tickle my fancy last week. Now, I have one other thing that did tickle my fancy last week. Now, if I talk about two separate things during Tickle My Fancy, that's kind of like an in-house rule that we don't do that, and your segment might get cut, right? So I'll put it up.
Mike's going to get rowdy because
he
always
wants to talk
about it.
Mike's not here,
so I'll put it up to you guys if you guys want me to talk about this or not. So the other thing that tickled my fancy last week was Magic Mike XXL.
I do want to hear about it.
I am curious.
So do you guys want to hear me talk about that?
Of course.
The stripper movie?
I made him watch it. I wanted him to watch it because I've seen the first one and I thought it was bad and he liked it. So I wanted to see what his thoughts were on the second one because I haven't watched it.
Okay.
So
go for it.
The sequel is more like the movie that Amanda described.
Okay.
Not a lot of plot, a lot of...
Sexy man dancing.
A lot of pectoral muscles, right?
Sexy man.
Yeah, a lot of abs, not a lot of plot.
It's like 500 abs on the cover of the movie.
It's a picaresque road movie, and each stop is an excuse to do a male stripping routine, right?
Ooh.
So in the first one, you got a lot of character drama about like the Mike character, right? And this one's more about like, screw it, let's have a self-destructive good time. You know, it's a little, I mean, it's better than a party movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
is
it's,
Mike in this one?
Yeah, he definitely is. So. But you get to meet all the boys in the stripper crew, including Ken, who is the Matt Bomber character.
Oh, okay. So, see, that'd be worth watching.
So, you will see more of him. And you also get to know his character more. Like, I don't know if you will like his character more.
He's still pretty.
His character is, well, that's why they call him Ken. Because Ken and Barbie. But he, his character is, he's an actor, and he's into, like, every, like, new age stereotype kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But in real life... Even though he claims to be into all this, like, quote-unquote spiritual stuff, he's actually, like, this really shallow actor who's, like, vain and, like, wants to, like, get any role in any commercial and he strips to pay his bills. So this character of Ken, and he's actually, like, you get to meet all of the characters more, like, in the dance troupe, but he is probably, like, number two in the movie besides Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I was kind of fascinated about this movie. Like, a lot of women like this movie. My wife wanted to see this movie because she read all these positive reviews about it. And the angle that I think a lot of the people that she was reading about it was that each little stop that they go on where they do a dance is like a different version of female sexuality and like female desire. So there's like certain women like this kind of man, certain women like this kind of man, certain women want this kind of experience, certain women like this kind of experience. Sweet. So that's there in that movie, and it's like overtly kind of what the movie is about. So that made it interesting, but still, like, there wasn't like the character drama that there was in the first one. And the whole reason why Mike is stripping again, if we remember the first Magic Mike, was that he quit stripping to get together with Brooke. And what happens is Brooke leaves him, and he has his business and everything, but he's unhappy. And I kind of like that Brooke left him in a way, sort of, because I thought that him even getting with her after the first movie was a little bit, like, unhealthy and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because
kind of happy ever after.
Well, it's kind of like she was just basically, like, you know, he was a good stripper. He made money at it. He had saved money doing it to, like, sort of achieve his goals. And she was, like, basically put, like, this ultimatum. You have to stop doing that if you want to be with me. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't necessarily know if that's, like, if that's, you know, if you're totally cool with doing what you're doing and someone else says, well, hey, guess what? You have to stop doing that if you want to get with me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, even though she quits stripping, becomes an artiste, and she leaves anyway. I mean, that kind of makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they also had, like, this weird drama between, like, her brother. I mean, like, maybe.
In the first one or the second one?
In the first one.
Yeah.
The first one was, like, all about Mike. Said he would take care of Brooke's brother, and
uh-huh.
he did not. So it's like, are you quitting stripping and hooking up with her just because you feel guilty about the fact that you let, you know, her younger brother go off the rails?
Mm-hmm.
So that made sense character-wise.
Was the brother in the second one?
No, he's not there.
Okay.
The also not there is Dallas, the character played by Matthew McConaughey. But that's all in the story about why he's not there.
Yeah.
And there's some really...
He won the Academy Award.
The comedian, he goes by the name Fluffy. What's his name?
Oh, Gabriel Iglesias.
Yeah, Gabriel Iglesias is in both movies, and he has the funniest callback to the Dallas character. Yeah, isn't that sick?
So I'm assuming he's not a stripper because he looks like me.
Well, you just have to watch the movies and find out.
Okay.
And, you know...
It's not Steven Soderbergh didn't direct it, right?
He didn't direct it, but he was the cinematographer. When he's the cinematographer on movies, he uses the name Peter Andrews, so he was the cinematographer.
Huh.
Quite frankly, I think that it's better than the first Magic Mike, because in the first Magic Mike, Soderbergh was the director, the cinematographer, the editor, you know, the whole... And he does these, like I said, these, like, artsy-fartsy crap that doesn't make any sense for the movie that he's making. It takes you out of the movie.
Yeah.
In this case, he was just a cinematographer, and sometimes his adventures in lighting make more sense and work. So I still think that Magic Mike was a better movie, and it still had a lot of naked men. But in this movie, it was definitely more about naked men.
The pretty men.
Yeah.
And
you know, and a comment on the fact that there have been, from like really hardcore X-rated stuff to sort of fun teenage movies, there have been... this whole slew of, like, movies about naked girls. So, like, here's a movie, right, about naked men.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah.
One.
Hey.
Yes.
You got Game of Thrones, too, right?
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
And Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, who wants to see that, seriously? That traumatized me for life.
I don't care much for the male nude form, but, like, every time I see something where there's a naked man, I'm like, yes!
Corrections! Does anyone have any corrections?
No corrections.
No, uh-uh.
No corrections?
No
one
correction.
Small addendum. The song at the beginning of the Valentine's Day episode was Love is in the Air by John Paul Young. We have this on Freegal on the Strictly Ballroom soundtrack.
Nice.
Get your love on. For more information about Australian disco superstars, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
That theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week,
leap year.
I hope.
I said that so confidently. We'll be right back.
I really liked the movie. I thought it was really great.
He's talking about Howard the Duck.